This is Tatooine Sons, a proud member of the Star Wars Commonwealth Podcast Network. Be sure to listen to Galaxy's greatest Star Wars podcasts, including Talk Star Wars, Tumbling Sabers Podcast, Generation X-Wing, Rogue Squadron Podcast, Skyhoppers Podcast, The Nerd Room, and San Diego Sabers Radio Podcast. Visit StarWarsCommonwealth.com and take your first step into a larger world.
These guys recorded an awesome podcast called Tatooine Sons. Everybody was
late. Welcome, Star Wars fans, to episode 15 of Tatooine Sons. This week's podcast is about the tearful and shocking finale of Star Wars Rebels. We'll break down both episodes and talk about what we think will happen to the crew of the Ghost. You'll always be a part of me, but I have to let you go. It's time for Tatooine Sons.
The Force is strong in my family.
I am your father.
I am a Jedi, like my father before me.
Welcome, Star Wars fans. This is Tatooine Sons, your weekly look into all things Star Wars, from the unique perspective of a father sharing his love for the amazing space fantasy saga with his two sons. I am BB Nate, and I'm joined first by my brother, Samuel the Hutt.
Juju Star Wars fans, thanks for tuning in, and if you're not a Star Wars fan, then there are probably other podcasts out there that would be more suited to you.
I don't know, something about knitting? Might be good.
Yeah.
If you're a fan of knitting, crocheting, that'd be good. Maybe fishing.
Yeah.
Podcasts. If you're a political guy, then this isn't a good podcast for you because we don't really talk politics, do we?
No, it's just about politics.
Ooh, I am the Senate. Anyway. All right.
And of course, you can't have Star Wars without bizarre father figures. So on that note, here's my dad, the Bowtie Jedi.
I am a bizarre father figure.
For sure. In every sense.
Yeah. But that's okay, because that allows us to have some fun, doesn't it? What did we do this week, guys?
Oh, jeez. We, if you didn't know, Mark Hamill got his first star. His first star.
You know what? It's his first. He got two stars, honestly. If you think about it, if you want to go like through some weird metaphysical approach, he got his first star and his last star.
Whoa.
On the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
All right, anyway.
Unless they add another one later.
Right, which they could do.
But he's not really like a musical singer.
He was in musicals, though.
I think he was just in plays.
He can be in theater, and that counts.
The theater one could work, yeah.
Yeah, see, so I wasn't wrong.
What do you think, Nate? Should he get a second star just for being cool?
Just cool.
Yeah.
Just for cool. Anyway, we went and we saw Mark Hamill get his star on the Walk of Fame, so that was cool.
Did we get to meet George Lucas, Harrison Ford, Mark Hamill, BB Nate, did we get to... Did lightning strike a third time?
No.
Not this time. We got there... Well, first of all, an hour and 20-minute drive took over 3 hours because LA traffic sucks. and so that happened. And then when we got there, they had a room for 150 people in the fan gallery area. And we were like 532nd in line, I think.
Right.
Somebody was lined up at 7 p.m. the night before BB Nate. Should we have brought a tent and a sleeping bag and lined up on the streets of Hollywood?
Yeah.
Really?
Yes.
You guys would have done that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Man, I would have been scared to death to sleep on the floor of that, or on the streets of Hollywood. You're crazy in the head. Because the tent's going to keep out anybody that wants to rob us or anything. Hollywood's, if you've never been to Hollywood... it's not as glamorous as the movies make it out to be, is it?
Definitely not.
Yeah. So, a lot.
Anyway.
And so we got to do that. That was fun. And what else did we do that day, BB Nate?
We did Secrets of the Empire at Downtown Disney.
If you don't know what Secrets of the Empire is, it's a hyper-reality experience. Basically, you put on this vest and VR headset, right? And you walk through these rooms, and you're seeing in this case it'd be Star Wars, right? But the rooms are patterned to the rooms that you're actually walking through. So
say you touch a wall in the game and you're actually touching a wall in real life. So it feels super real.
It was awesome. What was like the first time that you really picked up on that reality, that what you were seeing was connected to what you were touching and stuff like that? BB Nate, do you remember like what was your first moment?
Well, there was a lever that we had to pull to actually like an elevator.
Yeah.
And it was a real lever.
It looked CG. It looked virtual reality.
Yeah.
When you're looking at it and you reach out to grab it and you don't expect, you're wondering what's going to happen.
You just expect your hand to face.
Yeah, exactly. And what ends up happening is you're touching something physical and it's
freaky.
It is freaky.
And then what happened for me is they wanted us to board this little skiff thing, right? And if you don't know, this all takes place on Mustafar. And
if you don't know what Mustafar is, then go find a knitting podcast.
Right. Okay. And we walk onto the skiff, and there's like a good, 100-foot drop on each side, and lava and molten rock and stuff like that. And then the skiff starts moving. Now, we don't start moving, right? We don't feel any inertia, but we're seeing it, and I'm legit like frozen.
You physically, your body thinks you're moving.
I was frozen. I was afraid I was going to fall.
Like, I know, me too.
They wanted us to get off the skiff, and it was like so hard to walk in this like tiny little 1-foot wide plank or whatever, and I'm like, oh, no.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
And then I'm going to tell the whole story because there's a couple more.
Well, I don't want to spoil it for anybody that's going to spend $30 a person.
No, two more things.
Two more things. Okay, go Samuel ahead.
So one of them will be Nathan's thing. But
okay, Nate, so you're going to tell one and then Nathan's going to tell one? You can tell we prepped for this show really intensely this morning.
Yes.
Anyway, go Samuel ahead.
So they had this rack of weapons and they wanted us to pick one up. And it's very similar to what you were talking about with the lever. I reached to go grab a gun, and I'm like actually picking up the gun. It's like moving around. I'm like holding it, feeling the trigger and stuff. It was so cool.
Yeah. BBD, what about you?
And then we get to this like code breaking type thing where we have to break this code.
So we walk into the
Okay, first. So all of you dads and moms out there that are from sort of the 80s era, you guys remember that old game? It was the round circular Simon. And Simon. So it had, yeah, well, no, it wasn't Simon Says. Simon Says was the game where you would actually physically.
Oh, yeah. Simon Says. Yeah. That's right.
But kids today don't understand physical games like Duck Duck Goose and Simon Says and Red Rover because they never play those games. They're just always in their phones and on their consoles. But anyway, there's your dad moment. All right. So Simon was this game. It had a red, a blue, a yellow, and a green button. And it would flash a pattern with sounds, and you would have to copy the pattern.
Right.
So there was this K2SO is taking you through this series of puzzles, and this is that are part of the game, and this is a puzzle that's going on, and apparently that's what's going on. So first of all, we walk into this room early, apparently, because K2SO is still doing something in the other part of the room.
Yeah, I see the panel, and I'm like, ooh, I wonder if those are actual buttons that I can press. And before like he had activated the console, I'm sitting there smashing buttons, Oops, I forgot about the,
home. Sorry about that tapping. We didn't hit on your head or anything there. So anyway, Samuel Head starts pressing buttons.
I'm starting smashing buttons just because, I can. And then he's like, we need you to open the vault door. You're going to have to copy the sequence. You're going to have to do it on your end.
And we were like in sensory overload at that point.
Because all of us were trying to do it.
Yeah, I mean, you got to understand, you like go into Mustafar and you walk out of the ship that you're on into Mustafar. And there's heat lamps, and it's hot, and then you smell smoke, and it's all going on around you. It is intense. So for someone like me, and Nathan too, I think, who tend to be like, get sensory overload really, really quick. We're introvert by nature, and so there's a lot of sensory stuff that's going on. Right. We're both like a little overwhelmed, and so we get in there for this puzzle. And it's just like we can't pay any attention to the sequence. And it's pressing. And I don't know if Sam's messed it all up. And so we're just hitting buttons and K2SO is like, hurry up. And we're trying to figure it out. So BB Nate, what was your solution to our puzzle?
I just got so frustrated that I just shot it a couple times.
He shot the console with the blaster. I know.
It fizzled up and fried up and exploded and the vault door opened.
I don't know if that's what we were supposed to do.
It worked, though.
But whoever came up with that idea.
Could do both.
Apparently. It was just like in A New Hope when Han Solo and Luke break into the detention wing and they finished that battle and then the comm unit starts going off and they're asking him about what's going on and they're going to send reinforcements and he does it. And finally he just loses. He gets frustrated because he's trying to to deal with it, and he just shoots the console and says, boring conversation. Anyway. And so it was like that moment. And with the door open, we were like, then we flipped out about that too, because he shot the console to get the door to come open.
Oh, and when you walk in, you see each other.
Oh, yeah.
Through, like, stormtrooper.
Okay, so as a dad, you know, you're not thinking about these things when you go into it. So I'm going. We go in, and they render us in the virtual world, and I see Sam. Sam's basically the same height as me. So
we're in stormtrooper.
Yeah, you're in stormtrooper outfits because that's the whole premise. You're, like, infiltrating a base as stormtroopers. Right. And so you're in a stormtrooper outfit, and I look across, and I see Sam, who's standing there, and he looks like me and the size and everything as this. And then I look over to the left, and there's a stormtrooper that's like a foot and a half shorter than us. And the first thing that comes to my mind, everybody, if you're listening to this podcast, I'm going to give you like 4 seconds to go ahead and say the first thing that came into my mind. A little short for a stormtrooper, aren't you? It was exactly it.
It was so cute. Like, he was cute. He was so cute looking. I like pat him on the
head. We're like, oh, it's a mini stormtrooper. It was so funny.
Hey, but I pack a punch.
Oh, we couldn't have gotten through the mission without you shooting the console. Right.
So definitely go check that thing out if you're ever in downtown Disney.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
So cool.
That was awesome.
Now we can get on to the actual podcast.
I guess we'll go to the podcast poll of the week. Not that you guys cared anything about it. So our podcast poll of the week, well, that's nice. It disappeared. There it goes. We asked the question, what do you think will happen with the release date of Solo, A Star Wars Story? And the reason we asked that is because last week we talked about Avengers Infinity War being moved to April 27th and Leland Chi tweeting out about May the 4th be with us. And so the speculation was they might be moving the date of Solo up from May 25th to May 4th to be a part of Star Wars Day. And so we asked that question. Well, 40 of you decided that was a part of your Star Wars fandom last week.
Why?
I don't know. That was weird. I guess it wasn't a compelling question. But anyway, I like the question. 63% of you said that it's staying on May 25th, which is the date that the original Star Wars movie came out. So I can't complain about that. And then 37%, so almost 40% of you thought that it might move to May 4th. Here's what I think. If they were going to move it to May 4th, we had already heard that by now. So
yeah.
I think we're good there. Oh, and just by the way, it's so nice when Steven Stanton, the voice of Obi-Wan and AP5 from Rebels that, he just went into our Twitter account and tweeted and liked the photo of us recording this podcast right now. So Steven Stanton apparently listens to Tatooine Sons and follows us on Twitter. So Get the word out,
Steve.
We love you, Steven. And he was excited when I tweeted that our favorite episode of all time on Star Wars Rebels was Twin Sons, where he played Obi-Wan Kenobi, which was a brilliant, brilliant rendition of old Ben.
So good.
It was awesome.
So good.
I'm going to watch that.
And then there's that scene where he's singing.
We're watching that. We don't have it.
No?
Oh, we got to get that. We do this every week.
Every time.
Every stinking episode, we talk about that one, and then I say we need to get it that day. It's my birthday this month. You guys are leaving. Well, you guys already got me my gift. That was Secrets of the Empire.
We'll get you another one. This would be like a little extra.
We'll already be out today, so.
Yeah, that's true.
So.
Yeah. All right.
And then he did the singing part with AP5. That was good, too. I
like that. It was good. So, we're not going to have three segments. Today, normally we do three different segments, but we're only going to have two, because all we're talking about are the two episodes of Star Wars Rebels that came out on Monday. Now, here's what's exciting. I think we mentioned this on last week's podcast as well. We don't have cable. We don't have satellite. We cannot watch it when it takes place. So we had to wait 24 hours to watch it. But we had probably 70 or 80 of you watch it with us on YouTube Live and Facebook Live. When we watched it and we synced it up and you guys could count down. And as of this morning, it was a certain amount. Let's see what it is right now. So anyway, that we are currently in an unresolved copyright dispute because the audio is of the episodes. But we won last week's, so I think we're going to win this week's. And just to give you an idea, our reaction video, which is over 2 hours. Woo! There, it's going loud now. Our reaction video from last week. Or from these two episodes, it's already had 852 views.
Wow.
And so if you're watching this from Great Britain or Australia or Canada, and you have not seen the finale of Rebels because it doesn't come out for another week or so, here's what we encourage you to do. We're gonna tell you that the rest of this episode is gonna be filled with spoilers.
Yes.
And then once we play our spoiler alert siren that we play every time we talk about spoilers, from that point on, I encourage you to pause this, stop the podcast, and then when you get access to Star Wars Rebels final two episodes, go to YouTube, sync up. There's in the comments in the description below, we have timestamps where you can sync up with us on the video, and you can literally watch it for the first time, just like we were watching it for the first time, and see our reactions along with your reaction, and you can stick it up. So that'll be a fun thing to do. But again, for those of you that have not had a chance to watch Star Wars Rebels finale episodes, please, we're not trying to spoil anything for you. We're trying to be very, very clear. Spoilers are all over the rest of this episode, so stop this. Come back to us after you do that, okay? Here's the spoiler alert. All right, so the first episode was called A Fool's Hope, and yeah. it was sort of the appetizer to the finale episode, but it the was setup. A very satisfying appetizer with it. And so just like we did last week, we're going to walk through the ranking Rebels 5 highlights from StarWars.com, and that link will be in the show notes as well for this week's podcast. But before we get into their points of emphasis from StarWars.com, BB Nate, what did you think about the A Fool's Hope episode? Of this is the one where they finally get to they trick the Empire. You remember all that stuff? We'll talk about that in a second. Lots of Loth wolves,
yeah,
and stuff like that. What did you think about that episode, BB Nate?
I thought it was good. It wasn't a filler. It was just kind of a build up to the
setup. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, it was definitely setup. Setting things up for the finale. But it was really a fun episode to watch. We screamed a lot watching that episode. It was pretty intense. So, Sam, what did you think about it?
Loved it. It was good. I mean, the second one was good. It was all good. That's all I can say.
Yeah, the title of the article says Ranking Rebels 5 Highlights from a Fool's Hope, then underneath it, the subtitle is The Beginning of the End, which was definitely the way that it felt.
Yeah.
Just to give a quick synopsis of the episode, it says here, the penultimate, I guess that means like bigger than ultimate? I don't know. The penultimate episode of Star Wars Rebels proved that a fool's hope is still hope, and hope can change the galaxy. As the ultimate fight for Lothal gears up, Ezra and the Ghost crew gather old friends and allies as they plan for their direct assault on the Empire. So that's what the episode was about. The first thing that it talks about in here is Hondo. What'd you guys think about having Hondo there in the finale of Rebels? The last couple episodes of Rebels?
It felt like that this episode was a curtain call.
It very much is.
Yeah, this episode felt like a curtain call, but the next one especially felt like a curtain call with all the other different episodes.
I'm glad we're seeing familiar faces. I like Hondo, too. He's pretty cool.
I love what he says about Ezra. His quote on there is, "For that boy, there is nothing I would not do." That's pretty good. See, Stephen Stanton, since you're listening to this, you want to get me a job in the voiceover industry, I'll be more than happy. I'll be more than happy to join you in that. That was a completely... impromptu attempt at trying to get old Ben out. It wasn't close. I get it. Horrible. But it was an attempt.
He's probably cringing over there. It's like, ooh.
Anyway. I'm sitting here. I'm really wanting to work on a Ben Kenobi. with it.
That's his new mission. He's going to be going around all day. Talking
all day long. I'm going to be talking. Anyway, I'm not going to embarrass myself anymore on this episode. It's been fun because Hondo was a... Let's be honest, he was a bad guy in Clone Wars. I mean, you kind of thought of him as a bad guy in that one. And he started off kind of a bad...
Ahsoka, didn't
he? He was a bad dude.
Yeah.
And then he's... In this series, he started off sort of a guy that was constantly double-crossing Ezra, the Ghost crew. And Ezra keeps giving him a second chance, third chance, fourth chance, fifth chance. I guess it was good that he offered an extended grace to Hondo, because Hondo is as part of saving the... Lothal in this episode. What do you think about Hondo being a part of that, BB Nate?
It was kind of cool just because to see him. He was a really good character.
Throughout the whole series.
Throughout the whole series. And I liked him more in Rebels than I did in Clone Wars.
Yeah, I did too.
I think we all did.
In Clone Wars, he was kind of smaller, But in Rebels, he was a pretty big character.
Yeah, he was a huge character in this series. He came up 2 or 3 times every season.
Yeah, oh yeah.
I'm with it. And he's like helps us get introduced to Lando in this series and stuff like that. So there was some fun stuff with that. Cool. What about the next point that it brings up? The gang's all here. This is what you guys were talking about.
Yep.
This is curtain call time. Some of the characters that are coming into this, of course, are Visago. The crawler commanders. So all of the old clones that had taken out their chip.
Which I love the little hint to the fact that Rex was that soldier on Endor. If you didn't know, there had been the speculation that there's this one soldier on the Battle of Endor in Episode 6. He's got a beard. He's old. He looks a lot like Rex from Rebels. And then they confirmed it a little while ago.
Pablo has tweeted out about it at times, which seemed to suggest that it's true. Right. Kind of like we would love for Pablo to hint that Turbis, the Porg on the Millennium Falcon, is canon, the name being that. But, you know, we'll keep dreaming. Come on, make Turbis canon. But anyway, he's done that sort of thing with Rex a couple of times.
Yeah, and so in this episode, he's wearing almost the exact
same outfit. It is the exact same outfit.
Yeah, the exact same outfit as what he wore in the Battle of Endor.
Want to hear some new news?
Oh, yes.
Let's see if I can get over to my soundboard because we're going to go over here.
Happy babies.
Yep, here we go. StarWars.com databank, end of this week, changed the bio for Captain Rex, indicating that he was on the forest moon of Endor when they took out the shield generator. So
it's true. All of it.
So that's pretty cool. So it's been officially canonized, just like we pray someday Turbis' name is officially canonized. But that was cool. Some other characters. Of course, we talked about Hondo. Callus is obviously a big part of the end here of this. You keep calling the little pig guy that's with Hondo, you keep calling him Belch.
That's his name.
It's not Belch. It's not? Melch. It's with an M.
Oh, it's close. Belch.
Sounds like better. Belch, but
I think Belch is better just for the pig. You know, the sound they make even sounds like a Belch.
So yeah.
We're going to continue to go.
We got Ketsu, we got Mart, we got Ryder. We're going to talk a lot about Ryder here in this episode. Ketsu? Yeah, I don't remember all their names. And Jai-Kel. Jai-Kel was, I think, the little guy that the Rebels outfit. The pilot outfit, is that who that is? I don't remember.
Let's just move on.
Yeah, so they all come together in support of the Ghost Crew at the call of Ezra. And that was a fun thing. What did you think about the fact that, you know, you guys talked about this being a curtain call, but BB Nate, what did you think about seeing all these characters in this?
It was definitely a curtain call. This first episode was kind of to bring them in. And the second one was the more curtain call than anything else.
Yeah.
But this one was just kind of to introduce that they're here and they're supporting Ezra.
I think it's a good farewell episode. You know, you get to bring in all those characters that you love from the rest of the series and just kind of give you that one last chance to, you know, say goodbye. I thought that was cool.
Yeah. As fans, we don't sometimes think about the technical aspects of episodes like this. But when we watched the Rebels Recon episode about this, Dave Filoni was himself talking about the fact that bringing all of these characters in to one scene, which we'll talk about, I'm sure, here in a moment, was technically extremely difficult.
Yeah,
having all of those characters in there on the screen, the audio, the visuals, the movement, and all that stuff.
He's mainly talking about the battle sequences, too, because there was more people in those than we had usually seen before. So that was
It was pretty awesome. So point number 3, according to this page, was Ruch and the Double Cross. I like saying Ruch. Ruch. Sounds like a Hebrew word, which is like a big deal to me. I love Hebrew words like Chaim and stuff. Chutzpah in the back of your throat. That's a Yiddish word, but that's still a good word.
Close enough.
L'chaim, chutzpah, ruch. See, I think ruch might be Jewish. But let's not do that because he's a bad guy and that sounds weird. So anyway.
I swear we're not racist.
No, we're like part Jewish ourselves. So, okay. While he's technically a bad guy, ruch and the double cross. While he's technically a bad guy, you have to admit that ruch is kind of a... It's a bad word. We don't use bad words on this show. Okay. Unlike Price.
Not nice donkey.
Yeah, not like an evil donkey.
Yeah.
Unlike Price, who's failed multiple times, Ruch gets the job done and takes the rebels prisoner. On top of that, he takes multiple falls that should get... I kept thinking, when are they going to let this guy die?
He's like a freaking cockroach.
He is a cockroach. Maybe he's a species. He's cockroach-esque.
Cockroach-esque.
Cockroaches. What did you think when he kept getting thrown off the cliff and stuff like that? BB Nate. You were annoyed because he kept coming back? Yeah. He keeps using his strength and wit to survive. In this case, however, his success is short-lived. We're not going to talk about that part next or yet because we haven't gotten there yet. So, Rook, what did you think about Rook overall? He's a fan favorite from the EU, from the expanded universe, from the heir to the empire.
I thought he was a new character.
Oh, no. So Rook is a big part. The heir to the Emperor, the Thrawn trilogy. He's in that a lot.
I thought he was just brought in like new for Rebels.
No, he's Thrawn's right hand in those. Did you like Rook, BB Nate?
It was okay. It was kind of like a character that they just threw in there.
It was like fan service. It was like for all the EU fans, they brought him in. Could have probably had just a normal character that was new introduced. And it would have been the same, except that guy getting thrown off a cliff like 47 times in the final episode. I don't remember how many times it was.
I liked him.
Yeah, he was cool.
He stepped on my tail.
Well, he's voiced by Warwick Davis, who played Wicket and stepped on Samuel L. Hutt's tail at Star Wars Celebration and had a conversation with both BB Nate and Samuel L. Hutt. So that was cool.
That's pretty cool.
All right. All right, here's where we're going to get... really pumped right now because it's about Loth Wolves.
Oh, yeah.
These wolves were
off the charts.
Vicious in this episode with it. So if you've seen the trailer, which I'm assuming you have, in fact, if you're listening to this, I'm assuming you've seen the episode, but in the trailer, the mid-season trailer, you have that scene where Ezra is standing there in the dark and he ignites his green lightsaber, and the light of the green lightsaber illuminates the wolves behind him. Well, that's from this episode. Mm-hmm. And these wolves come out, and meanwhile, the Empire with Arinda Price and Rook and the soldiers, there's Death Troopers, I think. Aren't there Death Troopers? I know there was lots of Stormtroopers. And let me tell you, these wolves come out and they have lunch.
It's a little much for a kid.
It's intense. We are screaming. There were moments. There was one moment where one wolf has a stormtrooper in his mouth.
By the torso.
And another wolf grabs the legs. And I'm like, are we about to see them rip this stormtrooper apart? And with the things we saw happening, I wouldn't have been that shocked because it was already pretty intense. What did you think about the Loth Wolves in this?
They were different than what I expected.
What'd you expect?
Well, normally, what we've seen in the first few episodes is these wolves that say doom a lot.
They're just like these, gentle giant sort of things. Like, they're these mysterious guys, and, they're quiet. They don't do much, They're like a platypus.
And then we get to this episode, and it goes all crazy.
It does. They go off. They go nuts.
I mean, it was a little much for a kid show at times. I mean, they didn't, actually rip them apart or bite them. Eventually, what they do is they just grab them by the mouth and then throw them off the cliff. But still, it was pretty intense. I mean, they're, grabbing them and, shaking them around and stuff. It's intense. It was intense. I thought it was cool, though.
So, what we have to do to really talk about this episode, though, is talk about that moment with the double cross.
Yeah.
Okay. So there's a moment earlier in the episode where Ryder, and I'm gonna Google this. Sam, you explain what happened in that episode.
So Ryder, the Ghost crew comes up to Ryder saying that we need to strike now if we're going to take over the Empire. Ryder doesn't like it. And then the next thing you see is Ryder, messaging Governor Price through the holo feed or whatever, and he's basically surrendering, saying this is where we are, it's hopeless, just come find me. And he says something about, we'll do this governor to governor. So apparently Ryder had been a governor before. We weren't sure about that. We didn't know that, but they may have said it before, some previously in the season. But that came as a shock to us. So long story short, the Empire finds the rebel base, they attack them, it looks all hopeless. They capture, Ezra and all of them, right? And then, it shows that, hey, Ryder was the double crosser, and then he double crosses Price the second time, forcing baiting the Empire into the trap, and the wolves.
And it was all the plan that Ezra and him put together,
right?
Which there's moments where you don't think that's the case. You really do think that he's betrayed the Ghost crew and our rebels in this. I just did the research to find out for sure. We had speculated that that writer Azazi was the governor from. We were trying to figure out, was he the governor from the Thrawn novel? He's not. The governor from the Thrawn novel was Governor Tua. That was a part of that. So he and then I remember now. I saw a quote just a second ago, which referred that. When we first meet Ryder, he talks about knowing Ezra's parents when he was governor of Lothal. So, there's that connection with it. So we speculated some on that we were wrong on that. What did you think about that whole sequence where Governor Ryder or Ryder baits the Empire and Arinda Price into coming to this ambush, essentially, with the rebels on that? What did you think about that whole section, BB Nate?
It was kind of, I expected it.
Yeah, you called it. That was funny. Yeah, that's true. If you're watching the video of us watching the show, Nathan leans over and he says, "Oh, he's setting him up. It's a setup and that kind of thing." But when we were watching it, I was like, "This isn't a setup. He's a bad guy." I was really ticked. I was mad at Ryder with it. You knew it the whole time, huh, BB Nate?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he understands.
Never any doubt in his mind.
Well, cool. All right. The last point from this episode before we get into the finale is it's just the beginning. So they capture Arinda Price in this. The Lothwolves help with that. Uh-huh. They defeat the stormtroopers. There's probably more stormtrooper deaths in this episode than in the entire Rebels. Excuse you. Bless you. Don't blow. Okay. Probably more stormtrooper deaths in this episode than in the previous episodes combined. Yeah, it was nuts with it, but it was pretty intense. And now it's about using Arinda Price, mm-hmm. kind of going Phasma with her, using her as a way to get into the Lothal Imperial headquarters, the dome, in order to try to free Lothal. And that's where the episode ends. So if you were to, let's just do something fun. We've never done this before. Scale of 1 to 10, if you were to rate this episode, 10 being it was the best episode ever. BB Nate, how would you rate this episode?
8.
An 8? Could.
8 or 9.
Yeah, I would probably give it a 7 or an 8. It was a setup, and it was a good setup.
Yeah.
With it. It had some really fun scream moments.
Yeah. It wasn't a filler. But as we see in the next episode, fillers are actually more important than you may think.
Yeah, so let's move to the next.
You like? I love segues on this podcast.
You're the king of segues. Yeah, you always know where we're going with it. All right.
I got you.
So we're in the next episode titled Family Reunion and Farewell.
Aww.
I know, it makes me sad. Here's the description from the StarWars.com page. With the Battle of Lothal finally here, the Ghost crew and their allies prepare for the fight of their lives. Family Reunion and Farewell is the final episode of Star Wars Rebels and holds a number of moments we won't soon forget. The first one is Ezra takes a moment. So we're seeing Ezra. He's sitting in the gunner position on the Ghost crew, and he's got a holo image of his mom and dad with him, and he's saying goodbye to them.
We had seen that picture previously in the series a couple times, I think. But yeah, it was pretty cool to see that sentimental moment between them. It felt very mirrored to that of like what Kanan was doing before he sacrificed himself. As soon as I started seeing the behaviors that Ezra was exhibiting, I knew that he was probably going to sacrifice himself.
He did. He did a lot.
Well, we'll talk about that later.
So. Yeah, but it was cool to see that moment, I think.
He did sacrifice himself, though. That was the last lesson, and we'll talk about that going forward.
Just because you're sacrificing yourself doesn't mean you have to lose your life.
They're tying this in. You know, when we first meet Ezra in Season 1, Episode 1, he's an orphan on Lothal. Using the Force, doesn't even realize he's using it in order to get by. He's selfish, and he's having to live that way. Because he doesn't have a family. Mm-hmm. And then as he gets connected with his family that the Ghost crew becomes, we also see him having moments where we learn about his his parents and that family, and we know how important that is to him. There's moments where you think that maybe they're still alive, where we're being told that they're still alive, and the Empire is kind of manipulating Ezra through that, and so that's an important thing. So, BB Nate, what did you think about that whole section?
It was kind of just a part of saying that Ezra's not going to be there forever, and the show isn't going to be there forever, and just saying kind of that was the farewell
moment for Ezra.
Yeah, it was also a, sort of a conversion of the families too, because Hera's down below, and she hears him talking to her parents about his new family, and so there's this idea of this connection, and it really is a touching moment with Hera as well, because Hera's, like we talked about in previous podcasts, Hera tends to be sort of the mom in this family.
Yeah,
and so it made, you could definitely tell, you get the smile on her face with it. And it's a sweet moment too, because she's still grieving the loss of Kanan in this. So, all right, the next one, Arinda Price and Rukh. I get to say Rukh again.
Rukh.
Love them or hate them, Rukh and Arinda Price are loyal to Thrawn and the Emperor until the end. What did you think about Arinda Price? And we talked about Rukh already, but Samuel, what did you think about Arinda in this? The series altogether and this episode specifically.
She's all right. I mean, there's not much you can do with the character. It was cool, though, to see her and know the backstory between her and Thrawn from the novel. That was cool. Mm-hmm. Correct me if I'm wrong. Is it Thrawn that owes Arinda, or Arinda that owes Thrawn?
And I'd say pretty much Arinda that owes Thrawn.
Yeah, that's what I thought. That's what I thought. So it was cool to see that, you know, Thrawn's got her under his thumb. She's cool.
Yeah, but I don't think Arinda's loyalty to Thrawn is based on manipulation. I think she feels like she's in control of the situation. If you go back to the Thrawn novels, you realize that Arinda's got one person in mind the entire time, and that's Arinda. And so she's using, she feels like she's got an obligation to Thrawn because of what Thrawn's done.
Well, I wasn't saying that. Just because he's got her under his thumb means that that's why she's doing that. I just thought it was interesting.
I think she's hitched her, metaphorically hitched herself to Thrawn's wagon.
Yeah.
At this point. And so she's, riding with him, thinking he's a rising star. If you read the Thrawn novels, he's risen to very, very quickly to his position. And so she sees, if as long as she's associated with Thrawn, she's going, and it's worked. She's risen with him up to this point. So her loyalty to Thrawn is really driven from that, from her own selfish ambition.
Yeah.
With it. Baby Nate, what did you think about Arinda?
Annoying.
Annoying?
Well, that was the point, I have a feeling.
Yeah. Cool. All right, one last time. Ezra's gambit with Thrawn backfires as Thrawn turns his batteries against Lothal. So here's what happens in the this episode. So they go into the Imperial Dome, and this is where they call back. They send in Protocol 13.
Yeah, 13.
And then they – I'm pretty proud of myself that I remembered that. But anyway, Protocol 13, which calls back all of the Imperial forces into that dome.
Right.
And the idea was Ezra and the Ghost crew thought they could get Arinda to do that, very similar to Phasma and the Shield Starkiller Base in Force Awakens. They call all of the soldiers back, and Ezra thinks this is getting them all in one place, which allows them to, confine the enemy to one location.
Yeah, and then what they were going to do is launch that dome up, because the domes are mobile. They're basically giant spaceships. They launch it up and then, blow it up and get rid of all the heroes.
But a problem happens, and that is Thrawn shows up on the Chimera.
Yep.
With Palian. I can't remember if that's his name or not. I don't think it's on these notes.
Yeah, I know you're talking about that.
So anyway, he was the captain of the Chimera in the expanded universe, Heir to the Empire.
Yeah.
So that was fun for all those fans as well. More fan service there.
But what Thrawn does is he positions his Star Destroyer right over the dome. So if they launch the dome, it'd be too close to the city, and it would blow everyone up, civilians and Empire.
Right, and so it's backfiring against Ezra
at this point.
And it's always, you always see In the Thrawn character narrative, you see him always four or five steps ahead. He's playing, I've said this before, but it really is the truth. Thrawn is playing chess while everybody else is playing checkers. And so he's in this situation where he's anticipating every move that Ezra and the Ghost crew is doing and positioning himself ahead of them to capture them or to conquer, defeat them. And he's done that in this. So he's got the Chimera placed in such a way that the dome can't launch, which we find out the dome is actually a space vessel. Mm-hmm. Kind of like it reminds me somewhat of a really massive oversized version of those mini Death Star dome type things that are on the battle thing.
Attack of the Clones.
In Attack of the Clones, on Geonosis. And so it feels like that, except very like 100 times bigger.
Yeah, they're big.
With it. And so you feel like, oh my gosh, Thrawn's done it again. Mm-hmm. He's outmaneuvered Ezra and the Ghost crew, and he has. And then he starts getting ready to bombard and attack Lothal. Because now his forces, the Imperial forces, are no longer in the city.
Right.
So in order to get Ezra to surrender, he's going to attack the thing that Ezra cares for the most right there, which is the people of his planet with it. BB-8, what did you think about that whole element?
It was kind of expected for him to give up himself because this whole series was about trying to free Lothal.
Oh, yeah, Ezra sacrificing himself to save Lothal. Well, yeah, that had been a common theme for the last half of the series. I thought it was... I thought it was cool. I've always liked Thrawn. I love the book. I can't wait for the new one that's coming out. The comic book series is good. I loved it. It was a good testament to Thrawn. I'm going to do a segue, even though I don't...
No, we're going to talk about something. I want to talk about it. So in the very first episode and throughout the entire series, there's this running theme with Ezra of him climbing up into the air ducts of the ghosts, of different Imperial bases. Mm-hmm. And so here we are. Ezra's been trapped. He's got to figure out a way to get to Thrawn without being captured. So Sabine does a distraction. And where does Ezra go?
In the air ducts.
In the air ducts. It's a fitting thing. Because that's who his character is with this. So he gets up there.
Yeah, he's doing that all the time.
He gets out of the locked control room. And he heads... You know, I'm trying to remember. I guess Thrawn's still in the Chimera, right?
Yeah.
How does he get to the Chimera? I don't remember.
I think he took a TIE fighter. I think I remember seeing a ship going in there.
Yeah, I'll have to watch those episodes again because
they're good.
There's elements that I'm still missing from it. When you're screaming and yelling the whole time and then having conversations on YouTube Live with a dozen people at once, it makes it sometimes challenging, but it was awesome. So now we get to meet Thrawn. So now we've got Ezra facing off with Thrawn on the Chimera. This is a moment that we've been waiting for a long time. They've interacted a little bit, but this is really a confrontation. Mm-hmm. And Thrawn, or Ezra, he's willing to do whatever it takes to stop Thrawn in this. What did you think about that confrontation, BB-8?
Well, it was kind of what you expect from Thrawn. Hmm. Just trying to... He's ticked.
Thrawn or Ezra?
In season 4.
Oh,
Thrawn?
Yeah, I think Thrawn. Thrawn's had enough of the rebels in this season, especially the second half.
Yeah,
With it. Cool.
I thought it was cool. Very much like a good closing off. Like, you know, the bad guy finally meets the good guy, and it's this, you know, final confrontation sort of feel. I liked it.
And it could have just been a confrontation between Thrawn and Ezra, but then Thrawn takes everything down a hard right turn, and we meet another character. Who do we get to meet, BB-8?
The Emperor.
What?
But not just the Emperor as we think of, with the, you know, dark hood and deformed face and, you know, Sith. No, this is the propaganda.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that happened in the EU, and it's been brought into the Bloodlines novel, Thrawn novel. It's throughout the canon Star Wars universe as well, where the Emperor that the galaxy sees in video and posters and such is really it's Chancellor Palpatine.
Yeah.
Before he gets attacked by his own Force lightning through Mace Windu on
And you even see a couple of brief nods to that through Battlefront 2 campaign. There's a few posters here and there.
Yeah.
With you know, the Emperor Palpatine, but he looks like, you know, Chancellor Palpatine. So that was pretty interesting. I like to see that, how that No, this isn't, obviously wasn't the first time we've seen the Emperor. I mean, this is the first time we've seen the Chancellor, like the propaganda Emperor, but it was cool.
Yeah, it was very reminiscent to me. The whole conversation, the back and forth between the Emperor and Ezra is really reminiscent of the opera, the Mon Calamari opera scene in Attack of the, or Revenge of the Sith.
Yeah.
It's that moment where the Emperor is trying to take the impressionable, powerful young Jedi and manipulate him in by using the thing that he cares for the most. In Attack, or I keep going back, Attack of the Clones, Revenge of the Sith, the Emperor is using the story of Darth Plagueis the Wise and his ability to prevent death and the fact that Anakin has had visions of and dreams of Padme dying in childbirth and his desire to save Padme. He's using that against Anakin and trying to help him or to lure him, to bait him into surrendering to the Emperor's control and the dark side by trying to preserve the thing he loves the most. This is exactly what's going on in this final episode. You have him looking the same, and he's, what's the, BB Nate, what is the offer that the Emperor gives to Ezra in this scene?
The life he wants. Mom and Dad, Lothal being free and that stuff, but then he would be away from the real world and just be trapped.
Yeah, he'd be in, you know, it's obviously, it's a fool's dream. That can't happen. Mm-hmm. And why this is powerful is because in, and I'm not sure this is being talked about that much, but I really think this is critical to understanding this scene. We see this scene, you have to compare it and lay it up against the scene where he could have saved Kanan in The World Between Worlds in the previous week's episode. And Ahsoka is telling him, you know, basically you can't change the future. You shouldn't do this. And it's weird because he's changed the future with Ahsoka. If he leaves Ahsoka in that temple on Twilight of the Apprentice, she's dead with it. And he saved her. But then she stops him from doing that with Kanan and acts like that's not the way that this is supposed to work. You have to let things play out. And that's sort of the lesson learned is sacrifice. Now he's faced with the same type of thing. He can go back in time, basically, go back to his family. He's there. It's really an intense moment. And you wonder if he's going to do it.
Oh, yeah.
It feels like he's going to do it. Did you think he was going to surrender to that, BB Nate?
I felt like he could, but knowing Ezra past these four seasons, I kind of, the back of my head was like, he's not going to do it.
Yeah, we're definitely hoping he's not going to do it.
Yeah.
With it.
I thought it was cool. It was cool to see, like, the actual, like, character models and stuff for his parents. Mm-hmm. We hadn't seen that yet.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we did.
Yeah. We have.
Yeah. But that was cool. I think the Emperor would have won him over if he had just told him the story of Darth Plagueis. It would have worked.
So this idea of family comes in here too. Because if he goes to his parents and surrenders to the Emperor's manipulations, then there is no ghost crew. You realize that this is a moment where the Emperor is using the world between worlds. Because they've taken the pathway to Ezra's parents is the temple on Lothal that has a portion of the temple has been taken by the Emperor and rebuilt. And that temple is the portal that allows this access to this world between worlds, right, which is what the Emperor is using to try to get Ezra to do this. And with this whole element going on, it's basically time travel. And he's saying, okay, you can go back in time and change the past. But if you do this, Ezra realizes something's going to happen. What's going to happen if Ezra goes back in time and is reunited with his family? What happens to Kanan, Ahsoka, Hera, Zeb?
Everything's different. The whole future's changed.
Yeah.
Everything's different.
And he doesn't ever get to know them either. Sabine. He doesn't know these people. He doesn't become. They don't become his family. So what he eventually says, he echoes, it says on this article, I love the way it words this, Ezra echoes Luke Skywalker's, you failed, your highness. Mm-hmm. Telling him, you're wrong. I have a family. I don't need anything from you. Which, excuse me, Nate, that's one of your big moments in the series, I think. Wasn't it like one of your favorite moments, I thought you said?
Yes, it was. It was my favorite moment like, except for the twin sons.
Right.
Fight. It was just so compelling about him deciding if he's going to do it or if he's not. Mm-hmm. And staying with his true family, the Ghost crew that he has right now.
That's cool.
And if he doesn't, if he goes with his family, that's kind of a dream.
Yeah, a fantasy more than anything.
Yeah.
You know, I've often thought about this. I look back on my life. I'm older. Dad moment. Okay. I'm older, and I've lived a lot more life than obviously you two. And I've thought about this often. I know there are moments, there are crossroads in my life, and I know that there are crossroads in other people's lives where you make a decision, you make a choice to go down one path. And I've asked people this before to try to understand them. If what is that moment that you can think of in your life, and if you could go back and change it and change that decision and go down the other path, meaning you would have had to give up everything that's happened, the good and the bad, as a result, would you make a different choice there? And it's an interesting, this is a moment where Ezra actually physically gets to do that with this, and he chooses the life that he lived versus the life that he's dreamed about.
Right.
Ooh, that's deep. Whew. Man.
All right.
Dropping the truth bomb right here. All right. The fights, the laughs, and the losses, the battle in the shield room, lots of stuff going on. Do you think Giuseppe was going to die in that?
Nah.
I did, man. I thought for sure. He's sitting there holding on to that electrode or whatever, trying to take on Rook, who's like cheated death a dozen times already in these two episodes. And I'm like, he's going to have to like die with him to take out Rook. But at the last second, he jumps off of it, and Rook gets killed, and there's lots of stuff.
Fried cockroach.
Fried cockroach, yeah. Oh, I bet you that smells. What about the fact that Gregor, he's our one real loss in this episode. We could have had some seriously heavy deaths. Sabine, we knew Hera was going to make it out, but Sabine, Rex, we assumed was going to make it out. Zeb could have died. Chopper could have, well, no, Chopper makes it out too. I keep forgetting that. Callus, there could have been a lot of deaths, in this. And the death that we got was Gregor. What'd you think about that, guys?
It is sad, but I'd much rather deal with that than any of the other major characters.
Yeah, I agree with that. Okay, frequency zero. This is where it gets really interesting.
I was going to make a segue, but I didn't realize it was so far down the...
All right, so give us our segue.
So we were talking about how Thrawn was all, you know, like 10 steps ahead. Well, so was Ezra.
Yeah.
Ezra was...
Yeah, it's interesting. It's
that was a good segue.
So go back to Thrawn is playing chess. Everybody else is playing checkers. Thrawn has the Chimera blocking the Imperial Dome or whatever from taking off. He's bombing Lothal and taking out innocent lives because the Empire is no longer in the streets of the city. And we see Wolf and Visago. And
some kid,
Mart,
is that his name? Yeah, okay, Mart. On the ship, this ship is it,
it's a ghost.
Is it the ghost that they're in there? Yeah, that's right, it is the ghost at this point. And they show up, they call that as frequency, a signal on frequency zero.
Yeah, which Ezra said that if by chance I'm captured, you do this plan, and that involved sending out a signal on frequency zero. Which Wolf says no one uses anymore.
Nobody uses frequency zero. Why are we using frequency zero? Well, there's somebody listening in on frequency zero. Nate, who's listening in on frequency zero?
Whales.
The whales. I guess they're called purgles.
Purgle.
Yeah, I'm trying purgle. To find that.
They sound like porgs.
That's different. But
porgles?
Porgles. There's got to be a fan art of that now. Porgles.
So, yeah. So, they're... in come the whales. And these creatures, these living beings, these... Yeah, there it is, a purgle. There it is, all right.
They can use hyperspace.
Yeah, well, we knew that from the season, you know, the filler episode with the whales that everybody, it's like the first time we really see Ezra connecting with
animals.
I mean, maybe we'd seen him do that with the Lothcats and stuff before that.
Yeah,
but,
a little bit.
But, I mean, we're starting to really get this teased that there's this connection with the animal life. And he saves these purgles. And helps them. And now they send out the signal to frequency zero. And here come purgles. But they ain't just any purgles.
Mm-hmm.
There's some
regular purgles that we saw in the other episode. And then there are massive.
I mean, like almost Star Destroyer sized. Yeah. Bigger than the Ghost. Oh, yeah. For sure.
Yeah, they weren't Star Destroyer.
Oh, what about the scene where the Ghost latches on to the Chimera?
No, it wasn't the Chimera. It was just a cargo shipment.
Okay, well, it was so reminiscent of The Empire Strikes Back when the Falcon latches onto that Star Destroyer. It was so cool. Anyway, that was another one.
Yeah, awesome. It was cool. I love the Purgles. They're smashing into Star Destroyers, you know, just grinding them to pieces. It was so cool.
And Mart, I guess if I'm correct, Mart, isn't he the nephew of Commander Sodo or whatever that died a couple of seasons ago?
I know who Sodo is.
He was taken out what he thought were Star Destroyers in that episode. Remember, he had his own little crew of rebels on one ship, and they were taken out. They would lure the Empire in, and he constantly thought he was taking out Star Destroyers, and they weren't. They were like little ships in that episode. You guys don't remember that?
Oh, yeah.
And it was Commander Sodo who dies at the end of season 3, I believe.
Yeah.
His nephew and the Ghost Crew saves him. Well, now Mark gets to take on Star Destroyers
right.
with the Ghost and the Purgles, and he gets to take him out. That was kind of a cool sequence with it. Cool. All right. The will of the Force. Ezra blinked before, but he doesn't have to now. When Ezra assures Thrawn that this, the surprise Purgle attack, is all part of the plan.
Wait. Back up. We got to go back to the scene where Ezra
spit it out, Spanky.
Refuses the Emperor's offer. And then the temple starts, you know, he crushes that temple, right?
Oh, yeah. I guess we should finish off the Emperor's story.
And then the Emperor's hologram starts flickering between Chancellor Palpatine and the real Emperor. And then Ezra escapes the temple just in time as it collapses. And he looks behind, and then this hologram of the Emperor and the Chancellor flickering walks out of the rubble. And then it, you know, finally locks in on the Emperor.
Right, the distorted Emperor that
we're so used to. And then, I forget what he says, and then all of a sudden he's like, royal guards that are a lot
those royal guards.
That are a lot more like the Praetorian guards.
Yeah, we didn't see those royal guards in the original trilogy.
Well, they're dead, but...
Well, that's true. And Ezra takes them out.
These pikes, right, we had seen Force pikes, but these are different. These were literally lifting Ezra up off of the ground, like using this energy or whatever. And then Ezra, you know, grabs some of the rubble and, you know, not crushes them with it. Some Death Troopers come in, too. And he knocks them out, too. That was an insane sequence.
It was freaky. It was just him being held by these devices. I don't know if they were Force pikes or what were
Soda.
They?
Yeah, it was pretty intense. It was definitely a nod, though, to the Praetorian guards in the Last Jedi, because they looked and acted just like...
They didn't have these big, long, flowing robes. They were more a lot like ninjas or something. Mm-hmm. It was cool. So anyway, back to the part where Ezra's on the bridge with Thrawn.
Right. It was interesting because we learned that this was the plan all along. Ezra had thought this whole scenario out. I don't think he anticipated the Emperor element, by the way, but the whole Thrawn side of it. He knew Thrawn was going to have another plan. He knew that Thrawn was going to do something to stop the Ghost Crew from succeeding with their plan with the Imperial Dome thing.
Right.
And so he anticipates that if that happens, he gets captured, he sends the Purgles, and now the Purgles have taken over. And so it's definitely an interesting... scenario.
And the giant Purgles latch on to the Star Destroyer, and they're reaching their tentacles through the glass of the viewport, and they are wrapping around Thrawn, thus fulfilling Bendu's prophecy of "I see your demise" or something like that.
Yeah, that's true. I hadn't thought about
like many arms surrounding you in a cold embrace. That's what.
What? Bendu was a pretty cool character. With that, yeah.
So that came true.
And then, did you notice the position, the physical stance that Ezra takes in this scene where the tentacles are grabbing Thrawn and everything else, is the exact same position that Kanan takes when he dies on the Jedi Knight episode. He's got his hands outstretched and everything else. It's the exact same position. Just like, it's funny how Dave Filoni is so good at that. You know, he uses movement with these characters, these animations, to call back to things that have happened in earlier in the storylines. Mm-hmm. Like in Twin Suns, go back to that episode, where Obi-Wan is taking the same positions as Obi-Wan with Grievous at one point, Qui-Gon Jinn against Maul, all these different scenes. He's sort of taking those same forms. He does the same thing here. What did you think about that, BB Nate?
It was kind of the whole thing of what you were talking about, to add the Obi-Wan stances. And it was kind of just saying that Kanan Ezra is going to be gone soon, but he's not going to be dead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A couple things that are a little bit weird about this. First of all, you got to remember that the Purrgils can go through hyperspace. They're the ones that taught, or that they were, are considered the pioneers of hyperspace. And they sort of, in the episodes that we saw from before, you remember that there's this idea that the humans and their ships are infringing on the hyperspace that the Purrgils have been in for a lot longer than that. Right. So it's a really kind of an ancient thing that goes back. But because the Purrgils can go through hyperspace, something can happen now. And that is, the Purrgils go into hyperspace while they've got their tentacles all throughout the Chimera. Mm-hmm. And you've got Ezra and you've got Thrawn on that. And they want to get, you know, the rebels are calling Sabine and everybody are calling for Ezra to get off. And Ezra's like, I have to do this. I have to stay here because he's helping the Purrgils keep Thrawn at bay. And all this stuff goes on. And then they take the Chimera into hyperspace to...
somewhere.
We have no idea where. So we don't know where Thrawn is. We don't know where Ezra is and the Chimera is. But we know that they're pretty much alive at this point.
Yeah, no.
Except for the fact that there's all the windows on the Chimera are blown out and they're going through hyperspace. That seems a little weird.
I think
there's two things that can happen that I've theorized. One... Ezra is using the Force to keep a pocket of air or something.
That's what I thought.
You know, keep the bubble. Which is more likely. That, or the viewports have like a special...
like a shield. Like you see on episode three. That's true. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So either of those could be a viable option, I think. So
cool. All right. So then we get to this and we go to the end of that sequence and they launch the dome. And it gets blown up. Doesn't it get blown up?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm trying to remember it. So they launch the dome into the sky now that the Chimera's gone. They can blow it up without causing damage to anybody in Lothal. And they defeat the Empire on Lothal. And then they see a video from Ezra where Ezra talks about his sacrifice. He sends a message telling them to continue to defend Lothal. And here's where we get... our first glimpses of what the Ghost Crew is doing during the original trilogy. We know Hera and Chopper are involved in Rogue One. They're at the Battle of Endor. We know things like that are going on, but we always had to speculate what's going to happen with Zeb, what's going to happen with Kallus, what's going to happen with Sabine. We know what's happened with Ezra now. He's not even in this galaxy probably. Mm-hmm. Now we know that Sabine and Zeb and Kallus, they're still on Lothal preparing for what they believe is a retaliation attack from the Empire. And so that's where they're at. They're constantly preparing. And there's this idea of, you know, we defeated the Empire by ourselves. If we have to, we'll defend Lothal by ourselves. Did you kind of get the feeling that maybe they were like turning their back on the Rebellion, like the Rebellion, they maybe felt like the Rebellion had turned their back on them, BB Nate?
No.
Yes.
Oh, really? Okay, so BB Nate, why didn't you think that?
Well, Hera's the one that started the Rebellion, most likely. And
she was a leader in the Rebellion. There was all these different rebellions going on. She was part of bringing them together with Mon Mothma and Bail. And
for her to give up what Ezra died for, I think would hurt her most.
Yeah, I think that it wasn't turning their back against the Rebellion. It was honoring the legacy of Ezra and Kanan. They both, you know, Kanan literally gave his life for the crew and for Lothal. And Ezra, his last request, his last wish before he gets sucked off into this unknown area, unknown region, maybe. He asks them to defend Lothal. And so they decide they're going to do that. And so that's where we think Rebels is going to end.
So in a couple podcasts ago, you said if Star Wars doesn't say, it's probably not that important, and it probably won't come true. Go up.
What?
But he hopes to see them again. Will he?
Actually, that's just speculation. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. Speculation by Star Wars?
Well, I think that they're speculating that he's still out there.
So did Dave Filoni.
Yeah, I think that they're good. So then we think that the series is over. We think that that's the end. It's going to fade out or iris out and go to the credits. But then we go forward and we see Sabine standing on that tower where Ezra had been, and she's looking out. And the first thing you notice about Sabine is what?
Hair.
Yeah, her hair is completely cut short. It's like
almost a buzz cut.
I know, and it's different. And lots of people didn't like that, by the way.
That is okay.
But it's obvious they're trying to show that something is different. And she, you know, then you start to look at her, and she looks maybe a little bit older. And we find out that this isn't just a couple of weeks or a couple of months following that battle. Mm-hmm. How long after that is this? Where are we at in the storyline, BB Nate?
I think a year.
What's just happened in the story that she talks about? Do you remember?
Well, the Empire didn't come.
The Empire didn't come, but what had just occurred? The Battle of Endor.
Oh, yeah.
So we're all the way to the end. They have defeated the Empire. Death Star 1's destroyed. Death Star 2's destroyed. The Emperor's dead. Vader's dead. Luke, everything that we think of with the original trilogy has taken place. Rogue One and the original trilogy have all taken place after this.
So,
the Emperor never came and brought an attack. What?
Remember how I said I've never seen that city before. It looks so different. It was in Ezra's visions.
Oh, wow.
So it wasn't like that before.
Yeah, it was when he was with... Yeah, anyway. That was, 4 or 5 years after?
It's at least five, probably six.
Yeah, so it would have been a few years. The Empire never came to reclaim
the
fall.
So they rebuilt the city and the planet. And the planet's everything. Thriving it's outside of the Empire.
Yeah.
And like you're saying, BB Nate, you know, you thought that maybe the city hadn't looked like that in the series. No. But we had seen it, and the way we had seen it is because mm-hmm. Ezra had visions of what Lothal could be. And now they've done that. What do you think of BB Nate?
Well, I'm thinking that people can not speculate about Rex being the father of Jason anymore. Just as Hera and Kanan's son.
So yeah. Okay, we'll talk about that in a second, because that's the part... I don't even know if we have enough time on a podcast, and we're already way over an hour for me to talk about that, because I've got problems with it. But anyway, how much time has passed isn't clear, but it's post-Battle of Endor, so it's at least 5 or 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
With the Empire gone, Lothal has flourished to become the city Ezra has once seen in his visions. We learn that Zeb and Kallus went to Lyra San together, so they went to... And that's a really cool moment, because you got to remember that arc with Zeb and Kallus goes back to the fact that Kallus destroyed Zeb's planet and all the people on his planet. And so Kallus, though he's become good, has lived with regret.
Yeah.
Thinking that he annihilated an entire species.
Mm-hmm.
Zeb then takes him to Lyra San, which is the original home planet of Zeb's people, mm-hmm. and shows that there's survivors and that species is continued on.
Buddy cop film
Would be awesome with it. Hera and Rex fought in the Battle of Endor, confirming a lot of fans' hopes. There it is again on StarWars.com. And we meet Hera and Kanan's son, Jason. Now, that's clearly fan service because of Jason Solo. It's spelt the same way. So that goes back to that.
And it'll probably be Force sensitive.
I really have a problem with this.
Yeah, I see what you guys.
BB Nate,
Just right off the top, initial feelings, I'm like, it'd be weird if it was anyone else. It's got to be Kanan. And then I thought about it a little bit more, and I can see where you would see a problem.
And some people are going to think that I'm a little prudish, and I kind of, you know,
prudish?
Prudish,
can we have
an
English lesson real quick? Because I
prudish,
don't
prude, old-fashioned, too strict.
Okay, so prudish.
Prudish, and I don't like the fact that they're alluding to sort of outside. I know that marriage is not a Star Wars thing as much. I mean, there are marriages, but it is a Star Wars thing because the reason that there's the wedding ceremony at the end of Attack of the Clones between Anakin and Padme is so that they can have the birth of Luke and Leia and it not happen outside of a marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And we have Han and Leia married, And that's what gives, you know, that Ben comes from that marriage. Some people are going to think I have a problem with, and I do to an extent, that they're insinuating sort of an extramarital sexual relationship. Well, let me talk. Between Hera and Kanan. And I think there's a part of me that feels that way. It just feels weird that way. It just doesn't fit the story. Because we're having this, their first kiss was 3 or 4 episodes ago, you know, that we saw. And it's treated like it's a first kiss. And everybody is like screaming and ooh and ah. And there's this whole I love you thing at the Jedi Knight episode. There's something I need to tell you. And you know she's getting ready to say I love you. And then all this stuff's going on. And now we find out that she's been impregnated by Kanan. So, it doesn't feel right.
After the first kiss, they could have very well gotten married. And we just not have seen it.
It doesn't fit. It is a big continuity problem for me.
But they're kind of giddy at the beginning of this season 4.
In a great mood at the beginning of season 4. Okay, thanks, Sam.
Can't wait for you to get home. All right, BB Nate,
way to drop it there for us, buddy. Can't wait for you to get home. Oh my God, that might be the most absurd moment in the history of our podcast. Thank you, BB Nate.
You're welcome.
I think reality is, I think it leaves a plot hole. I think there's a continuity problem with that. And I think that
Dave, it's not like they can make a comic book or something, though.
Right. No, I mean, how do you put that in there? Dave Filoni and the animation element for the Rebels, I think they really wanted to keep Kanan alive through Jason and keep that story on.
That's a nice idea.
I also think they're setting up the next animated series because you have a young Ahsoka in Clone Wars coming into her own with the Force. You have a young Ezra in Rebels coming into his own with the Force. I think that you could see a young Jason Syndulla coming into his own in the Force in the next series. And I get that. But I think that they were so eager to get to that moment that they didn't see how it just doesn't fit the story that happened. I think that the love story was great, but this element of her having Kanan's child feels weird to me. So, and I know some of you are going to dislike the fact that I said that, but that's okay. That's the way I feel. So, but then we got one more thing that happens. So Sabine's telling the story of everything that's occurred about Hera and Jason and Rex and Zeb and Kallus and all of that. And then she turns around and she's looking at a mural that she's painted. In some ways, it kind of reminds me of the Mortis mural.
It does.
A couple episodes ago. Yeah. And she turns around and she looks out, and who do we see, BB Nate? You got to quit yawning when I ask you questions.
Ahsoka.
So Ahsoka's finally made it back. Where's Ahsoka been for the last 7 years almost, if you think about it? Because she goes into the World Between Worlds and then comes back to the Twilight of the Apprentice episode, which is a couple of years before all the finale events. Mm-hmm. And then the finale events take place 5 or 6 years before Endor. So we're at least probably seven years from the Twilight of Apprentice, and she does look older in it. What's Ahsoka been doing this whole time?
Maybe trying to wait for a ship on Twilight of Apprentice.
Just kind of hanging out where Darth Maul hung out. She's hitchhiking. She's got her galactic
and
thumb in the air.
And probably just trying to make a living and then do it.
I think that there's a problem there, because if she's this big part of the Rebels' world, then you would think she would come to the aid of the Rebels during the Galactic Civil War. But she's nowhere to be found in the Galactic Civil War. Why do you think that I think she's chosen not to engage. Why do you think?
It's like what Luke did, right? When he failed, he secluded himself.
Maybe that's what I hadn't thought about that.
She failed and she secluded herself.
Or Anakin.
I think it's Anakin. You remember back in the Rebels, in a World Between Worlds episode, and she's like, she tells Ezra, you can't save your master just like I can't save mine.
Right.
And so I think she stays out of it because she's waiting for something else to happen. And we know that ends up being Luke and Leia. Do you think she knows about Luke and Leia?
Yes.
We know she knows about Anakin and Padme. That's pretty clear at the end of the Clone Wars series.
I'm sure she's pieced it together.
I think she's expecting that to happen. So pretty cool. Well, where do we go from here, guys? I know we're way over on our episode. No, where do we go? What do you think is going to happen to the future of our ghost crew and Ezra and Thrawn? What do you think is going to happen? BB Nate, I want you to go first because want you to share your thoughts on, does this, or do we have a new series with the crew? What?
Well, I kind of want a new series with the crew because this was my favorite animated series. And I think it could be good if they do it, and if they, when they do it, no, which they will, they probably won't actually, but I just, it would be great for them to be there, and just, it would be amazing. I would love a new
animated series. All right, so I have an idea. I think they're going to have a new animated series, but I don't think it's going to be with our ghost crew that we know now, or even, you know, all of them, or just a few of them, because they didn't do that with Clone Wars.
Right, or with Rebels. They go to bring the Clone Wars people.
I mean, they brought them in, but they were more secondary, right? Mm-hmm. I think they're going to have the main crew, right, for the new series. And then later on, maybe second or third season, they start bringing in characters from Rebels.
In the same way they did with Rebels and the Clone
and
Wars
And I think
characters.
That they're going to all join in for the search of Ezra and all that. Maybe that'll be a short arc, or maybe it'll be like an underlying theme for a season or something. But I think they bring in the Ghost Crew as secondary characters later on in the series, similar to what they did with Rebels and the Clone Wars characters.
Well, I think here we've got a situation where our theory from last week's episode, where we talk about, you know, Leia at the end of The Last Jedi is talking about her friends in the Unknown Regions.
Yeah,
I still think this could be the Ghost Crew. I think this could be Ezra. Yeah. And I think that we could bring them in for a Star Wars Resistance series.
Yeah.
With that. So that's what I'm hoping for. We've talked about a lot. We should probably let you guys get back to your life. Anything else you guys want to talk about?
Anything else?
No.
I guess not.
No.
Nothing else to talk about. I know that we're going to be recording the next 2 weeks this weekend. You guys are going out of town. So we'll talk about the novelization. We're going to talk about Jon Favreau. We're going to talk about the deleted scenes that have been released for the Blu-ray that we can watch. A lot of that's going to be coming up on the next episodes. Let's talk about our poll. I haven't come up with the poll. Let me come up with the poll. Poll, do you think the next Star Wars animated series will involve the Ghost Crew trying to find Ezra? Yes, no.
Maybe so.
I don't know. With that. Anything else you guys want to say?
May the Force be with you.
All right, Patreon users, we love you guys. Thank you guys for being a part of our show. We've got some new patrons this week. And I'm going to plug you guys, even though I said the show was over. You guys are worth plugging. So thank you. Oh, we can't forget one of these patrons. You guys need to thank this patron right here. Guys.
Thank you, Grammy.
Oh, thank you, Grammy.
Grammy's a patron. Yay. My mom. Thanks, Mom, with it. And then we have Brad Tracy, who is a new patron as well. Thank you for that. And Tim Truex from the Nerd Room, one of our fellow Commonwealth podcasters.
Nice.
New patrons. Thanks, guys, for doing that. We should have plugged you guys at the beginning. We're sorry for being bad Patreon people. We'll try to do better next time. All right. Thanks, guys, for listening in. And we'll talk to you guys. Well, we'll talk to you guys in just another couple hours. Patrons, I'll probably release that one to you a little bit early as well because we love you guys. Thanks, guys.
Are you brainless? I never ask that question until after I've done it.
We're smarter than this.
The ability to speak does not make you intelligent.